We're beginning a new series today called Reach. And this series was actually inspired and kind of birthed out of the way we live our lives. To reach is to attain something, it's to pursue something, it's to grab hold of something that was once distant or removed. And our lives are really a metaphor of that, where we're pursuing something, where we're grasping for something, where we're trying to take hold of something that maybe is out of touch or out of sight or just kind of out of our reach. And so we're trying to move toward that and grab hold of it. And it's fitting that we begin this series today on the day where 55,000 people are running the New York City Marathon trying to reach Central Park West and 72nd Street alive. And they're just trying to make it.
Yeah.
And someone asked me, well, how long does it last? I said, well, till the last person crosses that line or they just drop. Like, that's how long it lasts, I guess. You know, it's just people are trying to run this race and reach. And in honor of the New York City Marathon, I thought I'd open by telling you about the one time I ran not a full marathon, but a half. And it was one time for a reason. But I ran this marathon or half marathon back in 2012. And it was the BMO Vancouver Marathon in Vancouver, Canada. And it was a beautiful, Vancouver's just a beautiful city. The event itself was beautiful, all sorts of things. But I'm not really a runner. People built like this aren't built to run. The only time I run is if I'm being chased by police or dogs, plural. And that's it. Like, if it's one dog, I'll take it. But if it's multiple dogs, then I've got to run. And so that's the only time I run. I really don't like this idea of running. And I like even less the practice of running. But because I had good friends that resort to peer pressure, I succumbed to running this half marathon. And it was a group of friends. There were six of us total, so five others and myself. And they said, Ricky, you should join us, man. We're going to run this half marathon in Vancouver. And I was living in Portland, Oregon at the time, or just outside of Portland, Oregon. And so Vancouver's about a six-hour drive. They're like, we'll go up, we'll spend the weekend, we'll rent an Airbnb. And this is back before Airbnb was cool. And I was like, what's Airbnb? And they're like, oh, it's this place where you rent other people's houses. And I'm like, that sounds cool. And so they're like, just run. We need six people. I'm like, why? And they're like, because that's how many our van fits. And we have five. And I'm like, I don't know about this. And so I'm like, well, what do I got to do? And they're like, here, sign up. And it's like, it's $150. I'm like, oh, come on. I'm like, now I got to pay to be tortured.
Right.
You got to pay to be, you know, tortured in this thing. But it said you got a free shirt and you got a medal. And so I'm like, okay, well, that's not quite worth it, but it suffices. And plus my friends, and I'm social and, you know, I don't like being left out and FOMO and all that stuff that plays into it, right? So I'm like, okay, well, I'll sign up for this thing. So I signed up along with my five friends. Krista was going to stay back because she's smarter and is more resilient than me in the face of peer pressure. And so I signed up and I'm, okay, we're going to go. It's going to be a weekend. We're going to have this awesome place. And so, you know, before it was in the first weekend of May. In fact, it was Cinco de Mayo, May 5th, 2012. And so, you know, months before, I'm thinking, okay, I've never run this long of a distance at one time. I've ran long races. I've done 10Ks. I'd run a huge kind of relay race where I ran 17 miles in 24 hours, but it was split up, and so it wasn't, you know, 13.1 miles at one time. And the expectation is that you're going to run it, not walk it. And so I thought, well, if I've got to run it, I probably should, like, research how to run a half marathon. And so I went online, type it up, start looking for stuff, and you know, found that there's an app, you know, from couch to half marathon. I'm like, oh, that's me. And so, and it gives you this kind of game plan for how you can run just three times a week, even better. Again, if it's easy, you'll do it. If it's not, you'll find a reason not to do it. And so three times a week, I think I can do that. And you start kind of working up. And so this is the fall of 2011. Gia was just born. And so I was like, well, I'm a dad. I don't want to take away from my kids, so I'm not going to train just yet. I'll wait till the new year, you know, in January to start training for this half marathon. And so I did in January, training for this half marathon, preparing and going through this and kind of stretching out my runs. And I started in winter, so there were a couple bumps and bruises, like you're running at 4 in the morning or 5 in the morning, and you don't realize that there's ice on the ground, and so, like, you slip and fall. And you, listen, you can be sad, but in the moment, boy, you get up so fast because you don't want anyone to see you. And so I busted, I don't know if anyone's awake, but I hit that ground and I popped back up and I ran so fast afterwards because just in case someone saw me, I did not want to confront them or have them confront me and say, are you okay? Like, I don't care. I just need to get out of here. So I had some bumps and bruises. I trained along the way, you know, got to the point where I was, you know, feeling good. And I got to a point where I wasn't quite running a half marathon, but I thought that was good enough. You know, and so I'll just, you know, I'll just go with it. Like, you know, I'll be fine. And so we get to Vancouver, beautiful weekend. It's gorgeous. You know, we're hanging out in the city, doing all the fun things. Then Sunday morning comes, the day of the race. I put on my bib, like patch it over my thigh because I thought that would look cool because Jesus has a thigh tattoo in Revelation. And so I'm like, this is kind of Christ-like of me to like tattoo my bib over here. And so this is how I'm going to do this. And I, you know, my friends are like, they've been training. They're like actual runners. And so they're like, we'll just wait for you at the finish line. They didn't even ask me how fast I was going to run. No. They just say, we'll wait for you over at the finish line in this section over here. I was like, okay, thank you. I appreciate your generosity. And so, you know, I run this thing, and the first 6 miles were epic. I was running like at an 8:30 clip, which was pretty fast. My goal was to run at a 10-minute pace. And so the first half, I'm running a minute and a half faster than I should have been. I got to mile 6, and I remember thinking, like, man, I'm running real fast. I should slow down. But I was like, I'm feeling good. So 7 was good. 8 was good. 9, I was like, I should start slowing down. We start running through Stanley Park, which is their huge park on the water. And, you know, probably about mile 9 1/4, mile 9 1/2, I was like, I don't think I got enough to finish. Like, I think I'm done. And I think this is probably, and I thought, I was like, well, my training, yeah, this is about as far as I've ever run in my training, so this probably makes sense. And so I get out of Stanley Park, and there's this part of the course where it kind of like wraps around, and as you're kind of running to your right, you come out, and you're on the Bay of Vancouver, and kind of the whole city skyline is the backdrop. So what would be to my left, to the north, are all the snow-capped mountains. To my right is the city, and the finish line is somewhere over there across this body of water. And I contemplated, could I swim to the finish line better than if I could run to the finish line? And so I just thought, you know what's probably good for me is to just stop right here, pull out my cell phone, and take a couple photos, because I don't know if I'll get this view again. And so I did. Literally, I just stopped in the middle of the course. I was like, this is a good excuse to just stop, you know, rest my legs, take some photos. And then, you know, and people were like looking at me like I'm crazy. And I thought, you go on, I'll get there. And, you know, so the next kind of 3 miles were a combination of walk, run, walk, run. Eventually I crossed and I finished overall at like an 11-minute pace. So I wasn't too far off. The last 3 miles kind of crushed my dreams, but I got to the finish line and my friends, sure enough, were there waiting for me. Like, what took so long? I said, don't worry about it. I've got some photos. I'll show you later. You'll appreciate them. And I guarantee you don't have these shots. And you know, we get to the end. So you get across, they give you this black BMO Vancouver half marathon t-shirt with a 13.1 and then like a million sponsors on the back. And then they give you your blue lanyard with this medal that you get to have. And so I had reached the finish line, and they had given me my reward, and I kid you not, the reason I say all that is to say this, like, I kept all of those things, the shirt, the medal, the little bib, even with the paperclip still on it for some reason, because I felt like it was to, you know, take, I kept those things from 2012, May 5th, 2012, all the way up to February 2017 when I moved back to New York. Almost 5 years. And the reason I kept them for 5 years is because I had worked hard, I had trained, I had committed myself to something, I prepared, I had an experience, I had memories, and I reached the finish line slower than I expected with a bit of a detour, but I got some photos, but I reached it. And because I reached it, I kept these things as a memento until Krista made me throw them away when we moved back to New York. But that's okay because I still have the memory. But the point of this is that I think that's the way we live our lives, isn't it? Is that we have something in mind, and we see it, and we think, okay, well, I don't know if I should do this, but someone's pressuring me to do this, so I'll go for it. Or I want to do this, and so I'm going to aim for it. I'm going to pursue this. And as we go for it, as we pursue it, as we aim for it, we prepare, we research, we find out information, we work hard at something, we run the course. Maybe there's some hiccups along the way where you slip and fall on black ice. Maybe there's some trouble where you just say, you know what, I'm kind of tired, so I'm going to take a debrief here, and I'm a break and take some photos along the way so I can remember the experience. But at the end, the goal is to get to the finish line, to reach what you wanted. And that's how we live our lives, whether it's in the context of a bank account. Well, I have $0 right now, so one day I want to get to $1,000. Or it's a relationship. I'm single right now. One day I want to have a ring on my finger, and I want to be married. Whether it's a career, you know, I'm at an entry-level position, or I'm at kind of this dream phase where it's all a dream, and it seems like there's no way I'm going to attain it. But I'm at this dream phase, and one day I want to reach this level or this mark or this kind of platitude that signifies I've attained what I wanted. And maybe it's not just a career, maybe it's just not a relationship, maybe it's not a financial number or a bank account, maybe it's something bigger, maybe it's a dream that you've longed for since you were a young child. And so you have this dream of doing something, being something, going somewhere, experiencing something. And so your life is this kind of trajectory, this course that you've mapped out to get you to a place where you can finally attain what you've always wanted, what you've always longed for. And the fact of the matter is, I think that's actually a good thing. I think reaching for something is a good thing. I think having a vision of what you want, a pursuit of, you know, for your life, an aim that you're moving toward is actually a good and a godly thing. But I think all of those things, whether it's relationship, finances, career, or even a dream, are small or just a component of the bigger thing God created us to reach for. Yeah. And that's our destiny. That our destiny is something that God has planned and planted in our hearts, and that we are to reach for, something that we're supposed to attain at some point. And so all these pieces, again, whether it's finances or relationships or jobs or, you know, hopes or ambitions or whatever, those are just components and kind of stepping stones ultimately to help us or to drive us toward reaching the destiny that God has planned for us. Amen. And this whole series is about helping you do that very thing. You know, we just came out of this series called Made for More, and the whole series Made for More was about helping you know and understand how God has made you, what he's made you for, but it does you no good to know what you were made for if you have no plan or no idea how to reach it.
Yeah, that's right.
In fact, I would say it's probably more frustrating, more discouraging, more kind of, you know, disappointing to say, okay, I know I could have more fill in the blank, but if I don't know how to get it, if I don't know how to reach it, if I don't know how to work my way toward it, then who cares if I know I'm made for it? Because if I can't have it, what's the point?
Right. Yeah. Right.
If I can't step into it, why does it matter?
Right. Yeah.
If I'm not going to be able to get there, then why did God give it to me and not to someone else?
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that God actually wants you to get there. That God actually desires for you to attain, that God actually intends for you to reach the destiny that he's planned for you before the formation of the world.
Yeah.
That God didn't envision something for you millennia ago or however long ago so that one day you could live and not be able to fulfill it.
Right.
Yeah.
See, if God destined it for you, he didn't destine it so that you could fall short of it. He destined it so that you could walk in it.
Yeah.
So that you could experience it, so that you could reach it. And this whole series is about that very thing. And throughout this series, what we're going to do is kind of follow along a guy by the name of Joseph and his life from a young age where he was destined for something. But his life, the course that he had to run, didn't necessarily lend itself to the way or the experiences or the plans maybe that the dream or the destiny God had given him kind of expressed.
Right. Yeah.
There were some detours. There were some challenges. There were some, you know, heartaches. There were some challenging moments. And what you'll find throughout this series and what you'll find throughout this story of Joseph is that week by week, you're going to see there's different things that you have to reach for. That reaching as a big concept is important, but even within the macro level of reach, there are micro areas that you have to reach within, outside of you, up, down, different directions to kind of attain what it is that God has for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Joseph was in no different, really, than you, except for the time and place that he lived.
Right.
Joseph is a historical figure, not just a biblical figure, but a massively critical historical figure, both in Israel, but and also the whole of the Middle East region. See, Joseph was a 17-year-old kid. I'll just kind of fill you in on the whole story. That way there's no surprises. Joseph was a 17-year-old kid at the time that we're introduced to him. And at this time, he receives or, you know, is made aware of a dream or multiple sets of dreams that God had given to him. Joseph was, you know, a young kid, not just a young kid, but he's the second youngest of 12. And so he's not really the oldest. He's not really the baby, but he's kind of somewhere in the middle. And he gets these dreams. His dad loved him a lot, but he had a lot of half-brothers and one full-blooded brother, half-brothers, half-sisters. And so there was kind of a lot of competition. If you grew up in a house with boys or with brothers of any kind, then you know things can get a little bit competitive. And brothers can be maybe not the kindest to one another or to a sister, for that matter, growing up. And so Joseph grew up in this home, the second youngest of 12, has this vision, has this dream, decides to share it with his brothers. He speaks it out loud. And in the process of speaking it out loud, they get frustrated, which we'll explain in a moment. But they get upset. They get mad. So much so that they decide, you know, we should probably kill this kid. And I've said I was going to kill my brother and my sister. But I didn't really have a plan or a real desire. It was more like a kind of a hollow threat. I'm going to kill you if you touch my stuff. But this is a little bit more kind of serious. This was maybe a little bit more thought out, a little bit more intentional. And so they decide to take this young brother, throw him in a pit, and while he's in a pit, let's scheme how we can kill him and get away with it. One of the older brothers, Reuben, decides, you know what, this probably isn't the best idea, and it's going to be really hard to get away with this. So why don't we just sell him off as a slave, and then we can convince our dad that he did die, but at least we won't have the guilt and shame of our brother's blood being on our hands. So the brothers agreed, like brothers would. And they agree that this is the right plan of action. So they sell Joseph to a caravan of traders who are moving across from east to west, traveling through the region where Joseph lived and making their way to Egypt. Joseph is sold as a slave. He arrives at a guy by the name of Potiphar's home. Potiphar is serving, and he's a government official serving under the Pharaoh of Egypt. And he kind of has responsibility for taking care of all of the Pharaoh's prisoners. So all of these political prisoners are kind of retained in a dungeon at the bottom or near the bottom of Potiphar's home. So Joseph arrives there as a slave hand. But he's a pretty good one, and so he works hard, he's diligent, he's faithful, he works his way up the ranks, and Potiphar at one point establishes Joseph to be kind of the head of all of his staff. So he's kind of a chief of staff or chief of slaves in this home, and then things kind of go south. You know, Potiphar's wife accuses him of assault, and, you know, things don't really go right for Joseph, so Potiphar throws him back in the dungeon. No longer is he at the top of the pecking order, but now at the bottom of the pecking order with the rest of the political prisoners, and he remains in kind of solitude or in this prison for an extended period of time. Eventually, he meets two other prisoners who are political prisoners of the Pharaoh, a cupbearer and then a baker, and these guys are thrown in prison. They have these weird dreams, and Joseph has the ability to interpret dreams like he did when he was a teenager, but now he's in his late 20s, and he has this ability and a gift, and so he shares their interpretation with the dream. And then the one request when they come to him, the one request he has is, when you get out, please don't forget about me. When you get out, listen, you're close to the Pharaoh. You're close to the highest ranking official in all of government. So when you get out, just do me a solid and get me out of here with you. Mm-hmm. And like good people, they get out and they don't care about someone stuck in jail. They just go on with their lives and they completely forget about Joseph for another 2 years. 2 years sitting at the base of this prison. Eventually, one of them remembers about Joseph and his ability because Pharaoh himself has a dream that he can't understand. And Pharaoh is kind of going nuts, threatening to kill everyone in his kingdom who tries to give him a false interpretation of this dream. And so this one guy remembers, oh, there was a guy in jail who interpreted my dream. Maybe he can help you with yours. And so they remember Joseph, bring Joseph out. Joseph interprets the dream. And then Pharaoh recognizes him and makes him the second in command, which, I didn't tell you this, was the fulfillment of Joseph's dream. That God was going to establish him in a position of authority at a level so high that others would bow in honor and in surrender to him. Yeah. So it makes a little bit more sense why his brothers got mad. Makes a little bit more sense why his brothers got frustrated, but there's more to come.
Yeah.
But this isn't the end of Joseph's story. Though he reached the destiny, there was still more to come because now he's confronted with the reality of a famine that's taking place, which is part of Pharaoh's dream. He has this kind of whole responsibility of managing the government resources, food, water, animals, trade, and kind of doing this for the course of the next really 14, 15 years. And then in the latter half of that 15-year period, he comes across a confrontation, a kind of an awkward moment, where his brothers, because of a massive famine, have to make their way to Egypt, the only nation that has responsible or has been responsible enough to maintain resources because of Joseph's leadership. And so they come and have to request resources from their own brother, not realizing it's him. Mm-hmm. They thought he was long dead.
Right.
But Joseph immediately knew who they were. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, Joseph is faced with another reality. I've reached my mark. Now it's payback time. Now it's time to bring something against them. And instead of doing that, he has to kind of look within himself and figure out what he has to do and kind of resolve the situation. But that kind of concludes or sums up the story of Joseph, a person who was given a destiny from a young age and ultimately reached his destiny, but not in the course or the path that we would expect them to reach it. And the reason why I feel like this resonates is because we have so many experiences in our lives that are very much like this, where we are believing or sensing that this is what we're made for, that this is the purpose we have, this is the destiny we're aiming for, this is the pursuit that we have, and so we're reaching towards something. But when things don't go right or when things don't go to plan, we think, maybe I got it wrong, maybe I messed up, maybe I took a wrong turn. And the fact of the matter is you didn't take a wrong turn, you didn't mess it up, you didn't get it wrong. It's just the part of the process that requires or that you have to work through in order to reach what God destined you for.
Right.
And so as we begin this series, my hope and my prayer has been that you would find yourself in Joseph's shoes. That you would relate to who Joseph is, how Joseph navigated his situation, and ultimately how Joseph reached his destiny. And I don't expect that over the course of the next 4 weeks, you're going to be all of a sudden reaching your destiny. But my ambition and my goal is to give you the tools and the resources to equip you so that you can reach your destiny. Whether it's today or whether it's like 15 or 30 years down the road, as it was in Joseph's case. But if you can kind of live with that vision and live with that perspective, then I believe you'll be set up to fulfill everything you were made for.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, we'll jump into the first part of Joseph's story in Genesis chapter 37. It'll be up on the screen for you as well, but I'm going to begin reading in verse 2. It says, this is the account of Jacob and his family. When Joseph was 17 years old, he often tended his father's flocks. He worked for his half-brothers, the sons of his father's wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. Thank God there's nobody named that in our group today. But Joseph reported to his father some of the bad things his brothers were doing. So he's a snitch. And you know the phrase, right? Snitches get stitches. That's the way it goes. So Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. So one day Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph, a beautiful robe, verse 4. But his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. And they couldn't say a kind word to him, that is Joseph. Verse 5, one night Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers about it, they hated him more than ever. Listen to this dream, he said. When we were out in the field tying up bundles of grain, suddenly my bundle stood up, and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before mine. His brothers responded, verse 8, so you think you will be our king, do you? Do you actually think you will reign over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and the way he talked about them. Now, hate's a strong word. But three times now, if you're keeping count, it says they hated him. Verse 9. Soon Joseph had another dream. And again, he told his brothers about it. Listen, I have had another dream. Here we go. The sun, moon, and 11 stars bowed low before me. This time, he told the dream to his father because his brothers wasn't good enough. So let me tell my dad. His father, as well as his brothers, but his father scolded him. What kind of dream is that? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow to the ground before you? Now, obviously they're Middle Eastern. I come from a Hispanic family. If I would have told my dad that, his belt would have been off about 3.4 seconds, and I would have caught a whipping so fast. But while his brothers were jealous of Joseph, his father wondered what the dreams meant. You see, the fact of the matter is this. Joseph had no real reason to believe these dreams. Now, it sounds impressive. Wow, he had this vision. He had this dream that, you know, the sheaths of hay or whatever they were going to, you know, of wheat, were going to bow down to him. One, if you have that dream, it's like, oh, that's kind of weird. I don't really get it. to, okay, the sun, moon, and stars, they're all bowing down to me. It's like, oh, that's a little weird. Maybe, you know, I ate something funny last night or just, you know, was going crazy in La La Land because my brothers hate me and I have no one to talk to, and so I'm isolated. And so I just kind of have these weird visions. So there's that element of it, but the reality is, the practical side of it is that Joseph had no real reason to believe these dreams. Because Joseph, again, wasn't the oldest. So he wasn't the oldest of his brothers. He, in his lineage, he wasn't in position to receive the greatest inheritance. He wasn't the one that was entitled to the greatest portion of blessing from his father or from his parents. He wasn't really the youngest. So though his father loved him, he was still not really the baby. So his older brothers, you know, the baby, you don't mess with the baby. You do kind of behind your parents' back, but not really like in front of their back or in front of them. And so you just kind of like, you know, you just kind of let some things slide. And you're like, you're young, naive, you don't know anything. But the second youngest, you can mess with that one. And so Joseph didn't really understand, or Joseph didn't have reason to think, okay, this is a natural occurrence. Of course this makes sense. I'm going to rule over my family. Duh. How did you not think this? If you think of like royalty, no one in a royal family thinks of, you know, okay, well, if I can, you know, I'm 11 on the list, so one day I'm going to be king. Like, it's just not realistic. Even if you were part of a royal family, let alone a regular shepherding family, let alone a group of people who, you know, day to day herd sheep and wrap up bundles of barley or wheat or whatever it was that they were trying to farm. And so he didn't have the platform for this. He didn't have the access to this. He didn't have the resources for this. He didn't have the privilege to do this. You know, some people, if we're running a 100-yard race, are born on the 50-yard line. Joseph was not one of those people. So when you talk about a dream or a vision, Joseph didn't have that. And I think part of what makes it difficult to reach what you were destined for is that same feeling, because you relate to that yourselves. I relate to that myself. I don't have access to those people or to that opportunity. I wasn't born with privilege. I wasn't given a platform. I don't have some sort of excessive talent that makes it obvious that I'm more gifted or better than someone else next to me. I don't have that opportunity. I didn't get that connection. And so you yourself have felt that same way, that in your destiny or in the pursuit of your destiny or pursuit of your dream or pursuit of what God has called you to, you feel inadequate. You feel left out or looked over. You feel like you've been forgotten or bypassed. Well, I see that person doing that thing. I see that person going over there. I see this person stepping into that. And me, hello, I'm just over here. They got the connection. They got the break. They got the opportunity. They got the job. They found their loved one. All my friends are getting married, and I'm just still here, single. Hey, anybody out there in the internet somewhere? Oh, well, they're young. They've got the rest of their lives ahead of them. And so they're 20-something. They're 25, and yeah, they're frustrated, but they don't know. I'm 40. I'm 50. I'm 60. I'm past my prime. I can't even get a job, let alone fulfill my destiny because of my age. Or you feel like, yeah, well, maybe they're just more spiritual. They know more Bible verses. They've got perfect attendance at church. They are asked to do things, and so I'm just here. I show up from time to time, and so it's clear why God has selected them or God has given them something and allowed them to reach while I'm just grasping at thin air. And I think if you were honest with yourself, and if we were honest with one another and the person sitting next to you, you would find yourselves relating to that feeling more than you would have, oh yeah, I've got great dreams and I'm going to achieve them. I've got great purpose and I'm going to accomplish it. You would see yourself as someone struggling to step into whatever it is that God has destined you for, struggling to reach, not just to attain, but to even extend your hand because you're so tired of missing that you don't want to whiff one more time. But God has something more for you, just like Joseph. God has destiny for you, just like Joseph. God is doing everything he can to actually reach you. God is working overtime to try to get your attention. And I love that God doesn't stop trying even when we do.
Yeah, come
That God doesn't give up when we feel like we've missed it.
Yeah.
That God doesn't stop pursuing us. That God doesn't stop trying to reach us when we feel like we've got nothing to reach for because everyone else has grabbed it already.
Yeah, it's so good.
That God isn't concerned about where you come from. God isn't concerned about your family history. God isn't concerned about your schooling or your privileges or your lack thereof or your opportunities, whatever, because God is only concerned about you and your destiny and helping you reach it. So he's going to work to reach you first. And I can't help but wonder, given Joseph's circumstances, how many times did God try to reach Joseph? How many times did God try to get a hold of him? How many times did God have to communicate something? What was it that God was speaking and Joseph was suppressing? What was it that God was trying to communicate? Have you ever found yourself trying to get a hold of someone for an extended period of time? And to no avail? Marriage. And so, I know. Krista would give an amen if she were in here. You know, I used to work for Citigroup. And I worked in their collections department, credit card collections. But it wasn't just credit card collections. It was late stage credit card collections. So people who were 4 to 6 months behind on their payments. And the reason I'm phoning them, the reason I'm calling them, is because for the first 3 months, they didn't answer anyone. So we were trying to reach these people. And it wasn't just trying to reach them legally, federally. We were allowed to call them 6 times in a day. So long as we didn't leave a voicemail at any point until the 6th time. If you left a message, then you couldn't call them back. But if you didn't leave a message, you could call them up to 6 times.
Wow.
So because credit card companies want their money, we were instructed, do not leave a message until it's the 6th time. And you could call them every single day, 7 days a week. So by the time we got to the 4th month, for the previous 90 days, we had tried to reach them 540 times, up to 540 times. Now, thankfully, no one's saying, oh, yeah, I know. So that's a good thing. I like that. But for 6 months, we're trying to reach someone, and they're not answering.
Right.
And we finally get a hold of someone and be like, oh, my gosh, I would do 600 calls in a day and have 8 or 10 conversations.
Wow.
But we reached them, or we would try to reach them. And sometimes I wonder if that's how it feels like from God's end trying to get a hold of us.
Wow. Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
That if he's working to reach us, and he's dialing us 6 times a day, and you know what? God isn't restricted by federal guidelines, so he can leave messages. So he's sending everything. He's freaking flying planes across the sky with a message. And he's working to try to reach us. And I wonder that if the hang-up, if the issue isn't that God is trying to reach us or that God's not reaching us, it's that we're not listening, that we're not responding, that we're not believing what God has for us. Because in order for us to reach God's purpose for our lives, God has to first reach us. If we're ever going to reach the destiny, the place, if we're ever going to attain what it is God created us for, it's going to first require that God reaches us. You know, we're so quick sometimes to get ahead of ourselves, aren't we? You know, you think, okay, well, I think that's what I'm made for. I think that's the destiny. I know that's what I'm called into. I know that's what God has planned for me. So I'm just going to run ahead, and I don't need any instructions. You know, I'm just going to get there. And this is me. Like, I just think of, you know, from a personality standpoint, if someone says, okay, you know, here's a river, and we got to get to the other side, we got to build a bridge, I just run ahead and start building a bridge, and I don't ask about, well, how big does the bridge got to be? How many people are crossing this bridge? What type of bridge do you want? I just start trying to build a bridge.
Right. Yep.
And God's like, whoa, whoa, like, I didn't even want the bridge there. I never asked you to build a bridge. I just said, we need a bridge. And so I'm so quick to get ahead of myself and trying to reach what it is that God wants for me. Oh, this is what God has planned for me. This is what God has destined for me. So let me figure out step A, B, C, D. And God, look, I arrived at Z. Here I am. And God's like, I was going to get you there by B.
Yeah, that's good, Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to set this up for you.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my greatest fears that I would stand before God and I would give an account for what I've done, and God would say, A for effort, F for assignment. You did a great job at everything you were at everything you did, but you didn't do the thing you were supposed to do. And the reason that would be the case for me is because I've gone ahead of God and trying to reach something without God, without allowing God to first reach me.
Amen. That's good.
Come on, wow.
But some of us are not like me. Some of us are the other side, where we're so good at denying and minimizing what God is trying to say to us. Where God is trying to reach us, at kind of reducing it or making it small, or saying, no, I can't do that. That's not for me. Or I'm too insignificant, or that ship has sailed, or that's already past me, or, you know, that's for them, but not for me. And I hear you talk about destiny, but I don't have one. 20 people in a room, and I'm the only one that doesn't have one. And that's okay, because I don't believe I deserve one. Maybe I've messed it up, and so I've missed that. Maybe I just don't think highly of myself, or as highly as God thinks of me, and so I don't believe that I should get one. I don't believe that I should step into that. I just think my life is to just live and exist and function apart from the destiny that God intended for you to have and to experience and to walk confidently toward, ultimately to reach. Or you think, well, I've messed it up, and I've screwed it up, I've done everything wrong, and the fact of the matter is that God is just scratching his head, like me at Citibank, saying, we've been calling.
Uh-huh.
Someone says, oh, I didn't know I was behind. I'm like, well, we've been calling 540 times.
Right.
We were trying to let you know. And God is like working overtime to get your attention. And he's trying to speak. He's sending messages every single day, trying to reach not just your mind or your heart, but your spirit. And the fact of the matter is, we can, you know, beat ourselves over this, but this isn't anything new. In fact, Job wrote about this, Job 33:14. He spoke this. He said, for God speaks again and again, though people do not recognize it.
Wow. Yeah.
God speaks again and again, 540 times, though people do not recognize it. Who's this? God? I don't know that. Hang up. God's trying to get us. He's trying to reach us. He's trying to connect with us. He's trying to speak to us. Yeah. Forget us. He's trying to speak to you.
Yeah.
He's trying to reach you because he has significance and destiny that he's spoken over you. And he wants you to live in it, to walk in it, to run toward it, to reach it.
Oh, that's so good.
And we miss it, but thankfully God is not frustrated by him, us not answering. God says, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep reaching. I'm going to keep pressing. I'm going to press on, and I'm going to press forward until I get a hold of you, because I've got something for you. And if I can reach you, then maybe you can reach what you were made for.
Yeah.
And so you've got to understand that when we read Joseph, it's this epic story of a dream, and wow, that's huge. But again, this was not something that, in the first instant, Joseph responded to.
Right.
It would have been so out of the norm, out of the custom, for Joseph to declare this dream the first moment he received it. Because I look at Joseph and I've got to wonder, he's 17, how long was God trying to get a hold of him?
Mm-hmm.
How long was God trying to speak to him? How many times did Joseph deny or reduce or say, no, you got it wrong? Or I can't believe that because even my brothers don't like me, let alone bow down to honor me. They can't even say a nice thing about me. The scripture says that they can't even speak a kind word to me.
Yeah.
And now you're talking about honor? God, there's no way. Not just that, but you again, I can't kind of overplay this, but you have to understand ancient Middle Eastern culture and customs,
mm-hmm.
where lineage and birth order and rights were assigned and ascribed from oldest to youngest. So Joseph, the 11th of 12, was so far down the totem pole of inheritance, so far down the order, the pecking order of privilege, of responsibility, not just globally, but regionally, but within his own family. And so for him to receive this message from God, maybe God spoke it to him in a dream before. Maybe God spoke it to him out in a whisper. Maybe God spoke it to him in a prayer. Maybe God spoke it to him in a circumstance. I don't know how many times or how many ways God tried getting a hold of him and God tried reaching him, but God was working overtime to connect with him. And so finally, Joseph understands in this dream, oh, this is God. But it would have been so rude, so out of custom, so dishonoring to his brothers and his parents to speak that dream with confidence, which is why his brothers got angry.
Yeah.
Which is why his brothers got upset and wanted to take action on it, so much so that they were willing to kill him or sell him off, because it wasn't normal for a younger brother or a younger sibling or the second youngest to say, I'm going to be honoring over you, and you're going to pay me honor. It was so dishonoring that the only option for them was, we got to get rid of this guy. He's not just defied us, but he's defied and disrespected our parents, our lineage, our traditions, our customs. And so Joseph, probably out of fear and worry, was just caught up in this and said, there's no way this can be true. There's no way I'm cut out for this, God. There's no way I'll ever reach that. But God, I love this. I love this, and I don't want you to miss this. Because God spoke to Joseph in a way where Joseph couldn't deny that it was God.
Yeah.
He spoke to him in the privacy of his dreams, where his brothers couldn't quiet it, where his parents couldn't deny it. And he didn't just do it once, he did it twice. Once to reveal it, twice to affirm it. And it was in a moment, in a space where only Joseph would know, this is the voice of God. This is God speaking into me. And I'm here to tell you today that God wants to do the same thing for you. Mm-hmm. That God loves you so much that he's willing to reach you in a way that is completely personal to you so that you will understand that it's truly him.
Yeah.
He doesn't need me speaking. He doesn't need your parents' approval. He doesn't need someone else's signature to sign off on paperwork or to accept what you're capable of doing or to recognize you in a competition or in a talent show or in some sort of career platform. God doesn't need anyone else's assurance, approval, or recognition, because God will speak to you in a way that's so personal to you where all you can think of is that was clearly and obviously God.
Right. That's good.
Because only God could speak to me in the intimacy of that moment.
Yeah.
Only God would know me well enough to share that and to reveal that to me in that way. And it's exactly what God does. And God is working, listen, to reach you in this way. God is capable of doing. He's not just capable of doing, but that's what he's doing even in this moment. He wants to speak into your circumstance. He wants to clarify your path. He wants to provide vision for your future. He wants to give you a clear target of what you're aiming for so that when you reach, you're not just grasping at thin air. You're not whiffing once again, but you're actually attaining something and taking hold of something. But it starts with God first reaching you.
Yeah, it's good.
And if this is how God reached and spoke to Joseph, then the question I have for you is, how is God trying to reach you? Because I think we miss out on God reaching us because we're not looking for it. We've already talked about this. We minimize it. We get ahead of ourselves. But if we can learn to understand how God is trying to reach us, I think we'll be far better suited to reach what God has for us.